back to Uproar in the Studio, your Chinese blockbuster podcast. I'm Noah.
I'm Reza.
I'm Andrew, and this is the first episode of 2021.
If you like our show and can afford it, we would really appreciate it if you would contribute to our Patreon at patreon.com/uproarinthestudio.
This week we're talking about Peter Chan's Leap, released in 2020. You don't have to see it. You can actually watch it pretty easily. It's on Amazon Prime. We're going to give a synopsis for this one, but if you want to watch it without spoilers, maybe listen to the show afterwards.
We talk about the movie with Liang Luo, professor of Chinese studies at the University of Kentucky and author of the forthcoming book, The Global White Snake. Here's our conversation about the movie, starting with a synopsis.
Leap is a biopic of Chinese volleyball superstar Lang Ping from her beginnings as the youngest member of China's Olympic women's volleyball team in the 1980s to her career turn as the coach of the U.S. women's volleyball team, and then China's gold medal winning team at the Rio Olympics. The film's action follows the friendship and rivalry between Lang and Chen Zhongge, the assistant coach of the 1980s women's volleyball team, who became head coach while Lang coached the U.S. team. Real Olympians playing themselves, bad airport coffee, and motivational karaoke. This is Leap.
How familiar were you with Chinese women's volleyball before watching this movie?
Very, very. I'm old enough.
So you saw the original era in this movie as well?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was, I'm not yet 10, but I'm definitely remembering things from the black and white TV and a group of people crowded. I know those pictures in the film. I'm one of them.
Did the sense of it as a sort of national achievement, was that palpable at the time as well?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's very strong. I think nationalism is definitely one of the three keywords I'd like to bring up. Maybe not the first for me, but definitely for many people. It's sort of a coming of age narrative, not just the personal stories, generational stories, but kind of a national story as well. So it's very nationalistic, for sure.
Could you tell us about Lang Ping?
Lang Ping. She is known as Tie Lang Tou, kind of iron tool. What's Lang Tou? to strike the iron, right? You need a tool. And I think that iron metaphor might have to do with her, of course, role in the sports, but also kind of iron girl type of socialist association. It's very interesting to me, this strong female character and how she is part of the sort of implicit, explicit Sino-US competition, you know, this melodrama about her being the coach for the US and beat the Chinese. And then come back in the 20 teens, I think. So that's a really fascinating story. And Peter Chan is famous for that. His American Dreams in China, it's all about that.
Yeah, there's all these interesting scenes in the movie of her being removed from, like, she had this national glory past, but then you see her at a supermarket in Irvine. And a little bit just sad.
Yeah, that's actually very, very good that you mentioned that. I think people may think this is all kind of nationalistic, but they did try, at least. I think Peter Chan did try to humanize. And her conversation with her daughter, I think it's pretty touching. I wish there's more, actually. There's more about her personal transition from a player to a coach, from a U.S. coach back to Chinese coach. So it's a hunger for more of those personal moments, actually. But they did put in some, as you mentioned.
That's what I thought was one of the interesting things about this film, because it really does work as a profile of her. But at the same time, the focus really never leaves the Chinese women's volleyball team. When she goes to the United States to become a coach and to win gold at the Olympics for the first time, really don't focus on her so much.
Yeah, some people say, oh, this should be like a biography of Lang Ping. But I don't think so. I don't think it's to that extent. As you said, there's a good balance of her story and the collective story of the group of... actually, there's a joke about the female volleyball players are the most famous girl group. in China, Nituan, K-pop style.
I mean, in sort of a like a pop star making a movie sense, this exactly. movie also features like the actual women's mm-hmm. volleyball team, and they're actually quite good actors. I was sort of surprised.
I know, and I read about the background, how they wanted to have actresses, like tall actresses, to play the older generation. It didn't work out. They had to kind of scout from all the volleyball players all over the country, and then finally Lang Ping's daughter plays her younger self. And so that's fascinating.
Yeah, I read about that. Yeah.
Bai Lang is her daughter, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was great. But it was also pretty incredible to see like gold medal winning athletes cry on screen, like put on an actual performance.
Yeah. Oh, the younger generation that play themselves. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, there's an interesting connection to pop culture. Do you know about the 乘风破浪的姐姐, you know, sisters make waves? I think that's one of the 10 keywords, according to Baidu for 2020. It's a competition for women over 30 to play girl group members, singing and dancing. It's the most popular TV program in 2020. But on that show, quite a few female volleyball players went on that show to sing with the other over 30 actresses and dancers. So that's kind of a real connection with girl group.
Oh, wow. They've had a big year. Because this movie was pretty huge this year.
Yeah, it won, came out in the pandemic.
It won Golden Rooster, I think, best film and best screenplay, and nominated for best director as well.
And just lots of people going to the theater to see it.
Mm. But the release date coincided with Wuhan, the lockdown, January 25th. So it was delayed for 8 months at like 50%, 75% capacity, and it was still... kind of 100 million in like over a week or something.
Yeah, which is it's baffling and amazing. Maybe this and The Rise of the 800 were the big movies of the year.
Mm, yes.
But what I thought was really the most interesting about this movie, and I guess it also speaks to that transition that Lang Ping went through, is that, like, I think, like you said, it's a growing up narrative, and by the end, China is like a mature world power from this, as the coach says at the beginning, we're behind, are we just going to sit here and sigh, or are we going to catch up? Mm-hmm. And by the end, they've caught up, and they're still, like, the challenge in the second half seems to be, how do we still strive for greatness in these maybe mm-hmm. more symbolic things when we've gotten the material victory?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. Actually, that leads to my second keyword, nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are three N's. If we end up having time to talk about the three N's, that will be nationalism, nostalgia, and I'll keep the third.
A little bit of suspense.
Nostalgia is like, I think our family is really interesting. I somehow coerced all of my family members to watch it with me, I think 2 weeks ago. I wish it was last night, then I have even more to say about this maybe. But my daughter, who is 18, born in the US, and my mom, who is in her 70s, and she remembers everything, of course, all the names of the group members, both old and young. And she was glued to the TV when we watched it. And my husband is a Swede and a specialist of Chinese history and was in China in 1988.
Oh, wow.
So since 1988. So we were like all fluent in Chinese and watched this together. And we all felt a kind of nostalgia for our own kind of, we all have different criticisms, of course. But my kind of nostalgia, as I mentioned, I was no more than 10. I'm in my mid-40s and watching, I was seeing myself in front of those black and white TV, of course, kind of reliving that experience. For sure, my mom, she can recognize the announcer's voice in the film.
Wow.
It's the original announcer. The male voice is from Song Shixiong. She knows the name. It's a household name. And she has all these memory about the human voice in addition to all the, you know, the sound of the chord. And so for her, it's really about the younger generation can't 吃苦 or eat bitterness, and the older generation, given their hardworking spirit. So this idea of 拼搏精神, the 女排精神, or the spirit of the female volleyball team is so precious for her. So she felt like, although materially we are very poor. So this is the mainstream, I think, interpretation of that. But she gave me so many details, like how the blockers are called the 天安门城墙, the walls of the Tiananmen, because they're so good, they blocked all the strikes. So there's this very interesting nostalgia for her. My daughter is actually very perceptive in pointing out the color and ambience. She talked about how color grading, I don't even know, is that mm-hmm. a technical term? Like how color is corrected for the 80s scenes.
Oh, wow.
And it was very much, not just color, but the, you know, the dilapidated surroundings is very much about actually echoing what my mom said about like material lacking and scarcity versus the determination of the older generation. She felt this is basically a propaganda, not nationalistic, but for the younger generation to kind of work harder, maybe from her own point of view. Because there is that very humane thing about the one of the member of the younger generation said, I'm going to quit. You know, that thing, I felt mm-hmm. It's quite moving and
yeah.
very real, if you can use that word. My husband, actually, he's the one who really felt the Sino-US competition. And he said, yeah, it's very nostalgic about the 80s and he was there. But the whole sort of setup is very about competition and particularly with the Americans, you know, one of the players, African-American players, I think, right?
Congratulations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I should know better.
No, okay. I just watched the movie.
Yeah, we just watched this
movie. Yeah, we watched it last night.
But anyway, yeah, so each one of us had a different kind of approach to nostalgia, but it seems to be a good connecting point. But it's more about our own either lived experience or imagined reality of China, because my husband didn't go back for a few years. My daughter went back with me almost every summer. So she has this material sort of surrounding sense of the environment and all that. But, you know, the bicycles, the blue uniforms and all those are very nostalgic.
Yeah, I thought the competition aspect was almost a little bit de-emphasized here.
I know, that's how I felt, but not for him. Very interestingly, I don't know why.
We also just watched My People, My Country. I don't know if you've seen that one as well. But there's a segment in there that's almost exclusively about people watching the Olympics in the 80s mm-hmm. and watching this game in the 80s. And that felt very much about like one country versus the other. So watching this, it was
hardcore.
Sort of, yeah, even though it was sort of focused on this kid, but this,
yeah, I felt the same with, I'm with you on that.
What I found really interesting was actually the 2008 segment where the Olympics are held in Beijing, and I think our memories of it is just like, that was such a big China moment.
Coming out moment.
Yeah, but to see that they were actually, the volleyball team didn't do well in that tournament. You know, I wasn't aware. And that was a kind of a weird narrative almost that like, to us, what seems like was so glorious for like mm-hmm. what China was used to was kind of a failure. And it came at the hand of Lang Ping.
Yes. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned 2008. I was thinking about this, what you mentioned in terms of sports in popular discourse. So I was thinking along that line, and I was thinking about the 80s, like the first Olympic gold medal in 1984, and then 2008.
And tonally, I thought it was the contrast between the two coaches before Lang Ping came back to coach in mm-hmm. China was there's the sort of hard-ass coach, you know, the from the 80s, who's very much like either you win or it counts for nothing. And then you have the hitting partner who's I think, Reza, you mentioned that he's never named.
His name was not mentioned throughout the movie, and I thought I was going crazy that it wasn't.
Do you know there's a controversy about it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I found that afterwards. But yeah, uh-huh. I was looking for his name all the way throughout, but looks like he didn't want it to be in the movie.
The real person said delete all of my scenes. Chen Zhonghe. His name is Chen Zhonghe. And apparently the two players who plays his younger self and older self, they are the jewels. They are the star powers. So my third keyword is new star power. I wanted to say star power, then it doesn't have an end. But Peng Yuchang is definitely a new star who plays the younger Coach Chen. And he is kind of adds comedy and humanity. That's why maybe he felt he's kind of demonized or made fun of. In real life, the coach had a lot to say about the film and didn't really like how he was portrayed.
I would think that he was more upset with the older portrayal, because that guy is sort of portrayed as, I mean, while he makes some literally heart-touching speeches, he keeps holding his heart, but he's portrayed as like too soft to win, almost.
Uh-huh. In addition to that, Huang Bo is a famous comedian, I think. Yeah, the older Chen. That's why he said, how can you make this like a he sui pian or just a wu li tou, like a comedy for entertainment? This is really not right. So he has a lot to say about the film.
Yeah, and they contrast him with Wu Gang, who's like...
Yeah, Wu Gang is plays this, what's his name in real life? Very famous Chinese Olympic. Oh, I forgot.
And he seems like he was on the national team before he was the coach.
Something like Yuan Weimin. I could be wrong, but he plays this real life coach or even like leader role in the sports field.
And like he seems almost a representative of, if not a revolutionary generation, but like an earlier China generation.
Yeah. His famous line is like, there's no you or me, there's only we.
He also says, the Americans won't show you mercy, the Japanese won't show you mercy.
But like I felt like very emotionally attached to his character, actually, because like I follow sports and all of my teams have always been really bad. So like you really want like this guy who's just like in there, like you're bleeding on the practice pitch, but you come out as a, you know, gold medal winning team. And
there are no tears on the Chinese women's volleyball team, only blood.
And you play for your country, and that was just so inspirational, even though obviously it was brutal to watch. It was, you know, once you get the results, it works on camera.
You see this sort of, and this happens in the United States as well with our films, you see this sort of tenacity for the idea of being the underdog that's presented both in this film, and you see it in a lot of American films as well. And I don't know, I thought it was interesting that sort of persevered even as, you know, you leave the 80s and you have China ascending to become a global superpower. But at the same time, in this small microcosm of the Chinese women's volleyball team, they can still maintain that underdog status because of the way that the team progressed over the years since that real peak in the 80s.
Yeah, that's really interesting, the narrative arc. But there's also a lot of criticism about the leap. The leap between the 80s and the 2000s is very steep in terms of narrative.
It felt almost like before credits roll, where they're like, this is the epilogue almost, but in text, there was that moment right in the middle of the scene between the leap between the two time periods where I thought, this isn't over. It's only been like an hour.
Yeah.
A little bit confusing.
I mean, what was interesting to me was that like there's this massive problem of, you know, what we've been talking about, China's materially done what it needed to do, so maybe sports is no longer necessary for that like rallying the nation kind of role that the sport team plays. But to get the team back to ascendance, you kind of need to bring back the old, right? So like it's like the message of hit the youth, like it's your turn, but actually you need one of the old guard to kind of shepherd.
That's interesting. That's actually my mom's interpretation of why this episode about she helped Lang Ping, helped the US team beat China, and then China needs her back to kind of salvage the declining national team. So it's very interesting. She said, oh, that proves her ability to coach and she's so indispensable and all that. So I thought that's an interesting reading of the whole melodrama.
And this movie comes at the end of, you know, we've reviewed a bunch of, you know, of mm-hmm. these, I would say, less soft propaganda movies like, you know, Operation Red Sea or Wolf Warrior 2, which are like bombastic PLA, you know, sponsored mm-hmm. good movies. Or like,
well,
you know,
some of them are good movies.
Some of them. But, you know, to shift from like fighter jets to the volleyball court and to be successful, I saw that this movie came out the same time like Mulan did in China, you know, when the theaters opened.
Mulan had all of its own problems.
Yeah, it does have its own problems, but like it destroyed Mulan in the box office in China. And Mulan tried so hard.
Yeah, but they both had Gong Li. Mm. The actress.
Yeah, I guess it shows make a Chinese film, you'll do better in China versus make a Disney film.
But, yeah, but also Disney both won. About strong women.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Just on the shifting narratives of soft power, I think this fits in with a movie like The Climbers too, which is also about aesthetic achievement, although it didn't do anywhere near as well as this movie. But it seems like a new trend. I'm wondering if there'll be more.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the third keyword.
Sure.
New star power. And it has another kind of dash, new media power. So the reason I want to go back to this is there's a lot of pop icons in this film. If you are not sort of careful enough, you may not notice them. So you have, of course, the real life female volleyball players playing themselves and their household names. You have the pair of Lang Ping and Zhu Ting, the older and the younger kind of generation. But you also have Huang Bo and Peng Yuchang. These are the older and the younger coach Chen, who was angry about his own portrayal. And these are kind of draws for the younger audiences. I would definitely think so. And Gong Li, who plays Lang Ping, is a huge star from Red Sorghum, which coincides with the first Olympic gold medal in 1984. So she's the fifth generation kind of Zhang Yimou girl, first generation, and then to her current role in Mulan. She plays this witch-like figure with wings, like the eagle. Did you notice?
I didn't watch Mulan. I couldn't. I haven't been able to bring myself to watch any of the live action.
Were you all boycotting Mulan?
I was actually in London when the movie was premiering, and I was just happened to walk by the theater where the premiere was happening, and all I remember was just protest outside the theater.
Wow.
That was one of the last times I was outside of my house, actually.
Wow. Yeah, but I think Gordon Chan himself is a huge draw. How many of Gordon Chan's film you've watched? I think you may have watched without knowing it's a Gordon Chan film.
Yeah, that's the case for me.
So I think Comrades of Almost a Love Story is from 1990s. That's really good, starring Maggie Chung. There's so many. And his background, there's an anecdote about him being 16, studying abroad in Thailand, and witnessing Lang Ping's first appearance in the volleyball court when Lang Ping was 18. He was in the audience watching her in Thailand. But he's a Hong Kong director and educated in Thailand and US and now based in Beijing. It's a very interesting, I think, person to follow with all this talk about mainstream filmmaking versus commercial filmmaking and art house and how someone can try to do all of the above and be popular.
And it sounds like his story almost to some extent, I mean, being a Hong Kong filmmaker maybe makes it a little bit different, but mirrors Lang Ping's story in the movie.
Yeah, I think he might even have U.S. citizenship. So he's called a Hong Kong American director. And this whole suspicion about someone who has U.S. citizenship and active in China is very interesting. I think that's a huge controversy for the 2009 Founding of the Nation film. That is the very hyper nationalistic film, but half of the actresses have foreign citizenship.
Well, Lee Gong is Singaporean now.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was funny. And we see that with, you know, like Wu Jing.
He got in trouble for Hong Kong passport.
Yeah, but
wow.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the new media aspect, I think it has to do with, for example, how TV is very new in the 80s for China. Mm-hmm. And the whole kind of sports narration or sports anchoring is very new. And I would use like a very academic term. It's called vernacularization of knowledge, meaning like all the terms that my mom learned watching TV, like all the volleyball terms is kind of vernacularized, popularized by all these new media in the 80s. But for now, in this film, I checked some Chinese sources. I never know this, that it has some kind of collaboration with Cinema Plus Infinity, which is like 96 frame per second or something. So it's very much about, it's like the An Li film, right?
Yeah.
A war film focusing on action, but this is a sports film. So
well, he did a baseball movie, one of those as well, I think.
Yeah. I think it definitely has that aspect of kind of experimental and technical in terms of high tech aspect. And that's very fascinating for me, who is interested in the avant-garde and the popular and the mainstream and the so-called sort of counter narratives.
It was very interesting in the start of the movie that it seemed to also almost sort of incorporate at least documentary like camera work sometimes.
And yes.
You can see that throughout the movie. Like I especially noticed it in the karaoke scene in the latter half. It's a lot of cutting seemingly because they couldn't get it in one, or maybe it worked better in four. But
it's very interesting. They used a lot of static camera in the 80s and just using many camera but very static, and they want to create that kind of old tech feel in terms of not just color but technology. So it's very interesting, I think.
Yeah, the scenes where they showed, you know, just with filters over it to make the matches that they were recreating look as though they were the original television broadcast.
Yeah.
That was a really interesting aspect of it, because I feel like it forced you to take that nostalgic look at things.
Yeah.
To imagine that you were watching it in the same context of it is a new technology, it is the, you know, first of its kind that you're seeing these kinds of events broadcast for an entire nation.
Definitely. Another star power, I don't know if you noticed the ending song. It's sung by Wang Fei and Na Ying. These are the most famous Chinese female singers, and they have huge power. Another promotional song is sung by one of the TF boys. And these songs are extremely sort of as promotional materials successful. They were pushed out from time to time. There's at least four songs promotional way before the release date.
Do you think there's anything beyond like a marketing significance to the new star power?
I think so, because in terms of positive images like idols, positive healthy female images in real life in kind of our contemporary time, is really, that's why I think the 乘风破浪的姐姐 or Sisters Make Waves invited the volleyball players. And they are kind of having a really good synergy in terms of that. So I think, in terms of box office, it's definitely one consideration. Another might be just really the thematic collaboration or coming together of the what they want to sell in the film, and using real life figures to kind of amplify that. I mean, that can be commercial too. I never can tell them apart, you know, nationalism, commercialism.
Yeah, they're getting good at it. That's why we wanted to talk about this one.
An art house, you know, like Chen Kexin is very art house, very active in all kind of spheres. Oh, this film is China's entry into the Oscars.
I saw that, yeah. I mean, the star power that I noticed was at the opening ceremony bit where they just had the Yao Ming carrying the flag, and I paused for a second because I forgot how incredibly large that man was.
That's actually real footage, right?
Yeah, from 2008. I'd be interested to know, after the glory days of the 80s, and I think this is maybe more of a question for you and your mom, like Had you checked out of volleyball as they kind of
struggled? Yeah. As I mentioned, we go back to China every summer. So my daughter, in fact, knows Zhu Ting in real life. She's an 18-year American. Not just me and my mom. And we watch competition over summer break on my mom's TV in her apartment in Chongqing. They are not like something of the past.
I'd imagine that... So for me, the actual volleyball sequences of the film didn't necessarily work as filmmaking, but I think maybe they were counting on people who were A, already volleyball fans, but already like familiar with the drama of those moments.
What do you mean didn't work as filmmaking?
I think it was so purely focused on volleyball that it felt almost like watching volleyball on TV.
Yeah, that's the point.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess maybe I'm not a sports fan as much. But...
I'm not either.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was thrilling. Especially the
80s. You meant there's too much of it.
Yeah, so for me.
Diluted. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it was leading up to one or two big games, I could have felt the drama of the moment a little bit more. But at some point it was like, oh, wow, good spike. Good tip.
Ah, dude, it's all about the tactical masterclass of like the substitutions and bringing in, you know, these stories onto the pitch. It was awesome. I loved it.
But I guess it has a kind of documentary weight. Mm-hmm. So it needs to document those key moments as historical kind of turning points. So all the what you consider too many, I think these might be necessary from the point of view of the director, screenplay writer, and team. It could be burdensome for the audience, I guess, but it tries to be like a bioepic, but also a docudrama, I guess. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Yeah.
Well, it was a very broad swath for a drama, I think.
Yeah. Maybe. I feel like if you have the actual players, though, you kind of have to.
That's true. They're very impressive human beings.
Like, they're playing like nobody else can. You definitely want to have that in the movie.
There's another point I want to mention, if we are pressed of time. That is, the Google reviews are much better than domestic reviews on Douban Dianying, which is the largest review site for films. Google reviews are like 95% like and 4.8 out of 5. And Douban, the Chinese language site, is something like 7.4 out of 10. So it's kind of mediocre. So it's much more sort of the so-called overseas Chinese bought it much willingly, I think. So we can talk a little bit maybe about long-distance nationalism and sort of a more intensified nostalgia in the age of COVID-19, things like that. Yeah.
No, that's super interesting. I wonder why that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really good reviews in English and written by like Chinese people outside China or something, yeah.
I wonder, with this being the Oscar submission too, whether Peter Chan was sort of thinking more in terms of this being an international film product while making
it. Not sure it's going to work, but...
Yeah, but on the level of just Google audience reviews, it seems to have...
Uh-huh. Oh, do you know anything about the Hamilton Behind the Camera Award?
No.
No.
It won Best Screenplay and Best Sound and was nominated for 4 more.
Oh, wow.
And it's definitely not a Chinese award, I think.
Where is it? Is that a Canadian award?
I have no idea. I was trying to like check Wikipedia. There's no Wikipedia article.
I guess it's just getting sort of semi-obscure production awards.
Yeah, it is interesting that it was on Amazon Prime, though. I mean, just... the way that we watched it.
Surprised. Yeah.
But yeah,
actually, it opened in the US in some 80 theaters.
Yeah, I saw that. I don't know if anybody went.
I didn't even know. And I'm living in a small town in Kentucky, so I don't know.
Yeah, no local AMCs.
Well, the whole like projection of power globally is kind of ruined by the COVID crisis being so poorly handled. Like, you know.
Yeah.
outside of China.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, like we wouldn't have been able to go watch this if we wanted.
No, but no, we can see it on Amazon and be impressed that there's a movie that came out this year rather than being ferried off to 2024 or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, one last thing. Chen Kexin is going to make a film about Li Na, the
tennis player.
Tennis player, yeah.
Oh, I want to watch that. That sounds awesome.
I think I would be much more into a tennis movie, honestly.
He's following up on his sports film.
Nice. We'll definitely have an episode about that because I really want to watch that.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like tennis movies are good. Maybe just because I like tennis.
See, we are all our own
because
selves.
It's individual sport, right? I mean, the soft propaganda might be a little harder with that.
Maybe, I don't know. I felt like Borg McEnroe.
Very nationalistic, yeah.
Borg McEnroe was good Scandinavian propaganda.
You're right, yeah.
Thanks to Liang Luo for coming on the show. That's it for this one.
Our original music comes from Elliot Saltmarsh and Yehuda of Fist, with a PH. And our art comes courtesy of Jake Astro.
Follow us on Twitter, at China Film Pod, like the Uproar in the Studio Facebook page, and if you could afford it, we would really appreciate it if you would contribute to our Patreon at patreon.com/uproarinthestudio. We are trying to assemble a Olympic women's volleyball team. Help out.
What about trying to buy a volleyball-playing supercomputer?
All right. If you feel like it. And if you feel like it, have some thoughts or suggestions, email us at uproarinthestudio@gmail.com.
We'll be back with another bonus episode next month. But before we leave you, we just want to share some wisdom from the chairman.
To read too many books is harmful. We'll see you next month. Thank you.